Hi there, everyone. Happy January. Actually, we wish them happy January at the Winter Classic, I suppose. But this is Late Night with Chris and Scott, your Blackhawks Crazy podcast. Even though the time that you're probably listening to this isn't late night, but we are recording it. I'm trying to get Scott from continuing to yawn here in front of me after the Blackhawks 4-3 overtime loss to the Nashville Predators. You're back to 100% too. You're sounding better. You look healthier.
I'm at like 97.6. I'm on antibiotics. I got a few left. And I had coffee all day today too. The hardest part was not being able to drink coffee for like 4 days. I love coffee.
Why not?
Because, you know, it's that like sinus infection where you just can't drink it. You can't drink anything like dry that's not really soothing. Tea's better if you gotta go hot.
I make room for coffee anytime, and tea too. But
yeah, it is hard. Yeah.
But the Blackhawks here continuing a 3-game homestand that will wrap up Saturday against the Vegas Golden Knights. That after playing one of the best teams in the West in Calgary and losing in regulation on Monday, then playing another one of the best teams in the West in Nashville here as we record after Wednesday night's 4-3 overtime loss. And then the team the Blackhawks have never beaten, the Vegas Golden Knights, who are on a roll, of course, as they come to town on Saturday to wrap up this particular homestand. I think this was, unfortunately, this is the way we're talking about the Blackhawks these days, but an encouraging night despite the outcome, especially against this opponent, because even though they split their first two games and only come away with an overtime loss here, I think the way the Blackhawks played against Nashville is the best I've seen them play against Nashville, dating all the way back to before the 2016 playoff series. Did I have that right, or was it 17? 2017 playoff series, when they got knocked out in the first round, and they were able to apply some offensive zone pressure against a team that has the best goals against average in the league, and I think has the third fewest shots allowed. And I think overall, even though there was some frustration with puck management that led to Nashville goals, and then they scored that other one off the initial faceoff, really liked the way the Blackhawks overall played in this game. And even though the results aren't ideal, again, we're starting to see some steps and some progress here under Jeremy Colleton.
I think you take the same away from Wednesday's game and you can take away from Monday's game. They're playing well against top teams in the West now, and that's something we didn't think we could say a couple months ago when things were pretty dire here. But in Nashville, it was a very tough matchup. They have an excellent defense. Pecorine has been playing really well. They're getting guys back who are banged up, like P.K. Subban, like Philip Forsberg, who scored 2 goals on Wednesday, the game winner, a minute into overtime. So, yeah, very, very tough team, and you know we're going to get into our picks later, but it's team that you could see going really far in the playoffs.
Yeah, we're going to take a spin. We should have done this at the exact halfway point, or maybe, well, we couldn't do it during the Winter Classic when maybe the one before that, but taking a look at the post-halfway mark of the season, some of the awards and some of the conference finalists that I know you can't wait to hear coming up later here in the Blackhawks Crazy podcast. But, Scott, one thing that continues to pop up here is the Hawks have some guys who are really on a roll individually here. Alex DeBrincat has a second straight 20-goal season out of the gate. He's the eighth Blackhawk to get 20-plus in his first two NHL seasons, the last one being Artemi Panarin. But he scores his 21st, 10th in 15 games here on Wednesday night. Patrick Kane, you can put any combination of whatever sequence lately he's done in terms of points versus games played, but the shortest one is 7 goals and 14 points over the last 7. He had 2 more helpers on Wednesday night. Jonathan Toews continues to perform well. 16 points the last 14 games. He's up to 40 points after totaling 52 all of last season. And we'll get to Eric Gustafson in a minute, but I think what's clear here is we're seeing better execution. And pray tell, the special teams are performing pretty well. And I think that all that goes hand in hand in how well we're seeing the overall play improve, despite the results not coming as successfully as you would hope in the end run.
Yeah, special teams are better. You know, I like the balance better Wednesday night, and a big part of that for me was it was time to move Alex DeBrincat up to the top line. Mm-hmm. Brandon Saad, for me, has been playing very consistently all year. You know, he's doing things right. He's crashing in that.
Still snake bit.
Gonna say, but he's snake bitten for the second year in a row. So why not move him down to third line? You'll get some good two-way play out of him there, and time for Alex, who's been playing out of his mind, doing everything right, to go to at least the first line, if not back at some point the second line with Strom and Kane. So good to see him there. I think that's where he needs to be, in a top six role. And, you know, you never know, if Saad gets going, he could still be a top six guy later on. But very nice to see Alex DeBrincat on the top line Wednesday night.
And part of that equation, but putting Saad down on the quote-unquote third line, or whatever you want to call it, is, you know, will that production increase without, you know, having a Taves and a Cahoon to play with? But, you know, that's on Brandon, who has 5 goals over his last 23 games. Had that extra attacker goal on Monday to give him 12 for the season. You still want a little bit more out of him. Otherwise, his overall game, I think, has been real good. And this is going to be a heavily defensive-themed podcast here, because interesting thing that Jeremy Colleton did in this matchup against Nashville with another Uber line that they were facing with, in Forsberg, Arvidsson, and Johansson, in order to get Jonathan Taves away from that particular matchup. With the last change, he decided to put Drake Kajula, David Kampf, and Saad. And mixed results in terms of what the final numbers were and the production that big Nashville line was able to deliver. But he's mixing and matching and trying some different things here, and I think he's getting a better grasp here of what exactly he has in some individual players and how they can work together in different units.
You know, one individual player kind of had an interesting game for them, and I heard you and Troy talking about in the first intermission was Delia. I think in no way do you put this loss on Delia. I think you can even say overall he was good on Wednesday night, but just a little bit of, I guess you could say, control issues more so than usual. First period, it was giving up some rebounds that he usually doesn't, that he hasn't in his previous starts. And second period, it was kind of bobbling the puck there. I think it was Forsberg who was crashing the net, and he kind of was having trouble getting a glove on it a couple times in a row. So maybe not his best game, and doing some things that are uncharacteristic of him and the way he plays, but still a good effort.
Yeah, and I think he was fighting it all night. And this is the first time, I think, that we've seen since he was called up last year. Wasn't even fighting it as much in his NHL debut until he got dehydrated last season. But this is really the first instance here, as his record falls to 3-1-2 on the season, where he may not have been at his best, but he battled and he still got the help get the Blackhawks into overtime. Obviously, Artem Anisimov's goal with 2.5 minutes left had a lot to do with that. So now I'm interested to see if Jeremy goes back to him Saturday against Vegas, continues getting him more playing time. Cam Ward hasn't necessarily done anything not to warrant regular playing time, but this is not a back-to-back situation. And as the most important things right now, if the Blackhawks aren't going to find a way to get real hot and make it in the playoffs, it's about evaluation. And there's big question marks over this position moving forward, goaltending position moving forward into next season. And how much of a workload Jeremy gives Colin here is going to be real interesting. And I would assume that as long as he's able, Colin's going to get an opportunity to see what he can do with a regular workload at this level.
My guess is he goes Saturday, be his third consecutive start. It's the first time, I think.
And there's spacing between games here, too.
Yeah, it's not, you know, nowhere close to back-to-back. He can rest, he can practice. Everything you want to do as a goalie, see shots and get some rest. So, yeah, Ward last start was the Winter Classic. I think you see Delia start to get control and get the majority of the starts here. It's one of those things where, I mean, you're almost not surprised if it goes the other way, because mm-hmm. it's a very almost iffy situation. You don't want to play him too much, but at the same time, you want him to start getting more time, more confidence. So, yeah, I could see him playing Saturday.
Nothing is new with Corey Crawford. By the way, Cam Ward did play in the game against Pittsburgh, had a pretty solid night as well.
Yeah,
but nothing new on Corey Crawford. We did see him after the morning skate here walk past the media. But Jeremy, having gone through that and how it ended his career, staying totally out of that situation publicly and apparently privately, too. He's not bugging Corey, and until Corey is showing some signs of being closer, I think he knows through experience just to stay away from that. Another guy among many being evaluated on this roster is Erik Gustafsson, who has been lights out offensively this season. The power play success, I think, has had a lot to do with Gustafsson quarterbacking a lot more and spotting, setting up your Patrick Kanes and Alex DeBrincats on that power play. But we all know the main question about Gustafson's long-term future here is how he can adapt defensively. And on that first Nashville goal, a little bit of opposition. That whole sequence initially started with Artem Anisimov not getting the puck out of the zone when he had the opportunity. Nashville kept pressuring, and things got a little scrambly for Gustafson in particular. And despite running his assist streak now to 7 consecutive games, he has 9 helpers in the 7-game assist streak. He was a little bit hard on himself. After the game, you'll eventually hear from that as he reacts to some reporters' questions.
Eric, you get the point tonight. Obviously, that's a good thing, but I'm sure you're disappointed you don't get 2. And do you guys feel like you need to get 2 on a more consistent basis going forward?
Yeah, I think so. We know what spot we are in right now, and we need all the points we need can get 2. And we're down 1 goal at the end. Obviously, it's good to come up with 1 point, but we wanted to.
Do you feel like this team is getting closer, though, to that capability? You feel like you're getting closer to that capability to go on a little bit of a run?
Yeah, I think we're doing a great job after every game now. I think we're coming out from the start, playing 60 minutes, and today it was... We got a big goal in PK there, and it was good for us to get at least 1 point when we were down with 1 goal at the end there.
How would you evaluate as a whole the whole team performance tonight?
For myself, I felt I was terrible today, but I think the team played well. I think we can be better in our own zone, but for 60 minutes, I think we played well.
What do you think was terrible about your performance?
I struggled with the puck in my own zone. Passes wasn't there. It just felt off.
Leading into this game, though, I think you had about 6 assists in the straight 6 games. So, this game aside, what's been working for you offensively?
I think our power play has been working great. I think we're moving the puck well. I think I don't know how many assists I have in the power play right now, but at the end, last 6 or 7 games, we've been really good at the power play. I think that's a big part. We stay in the games too, and I think if we want to win the games, we have to score goals in there too.
In a game like that for you, is there a danger of pressing and trying to do too much?
A little bit, yeah. I think I maybe have to calm down a little bit when the puck is not my friend out there. It's just I got to keep going. And when I don't seriously like a friend with the puck, I keep doing those hard plays I maybe not have to do all the time. And if I get rid of that, it's going to be good for me.
What was the feeling among you guys after Tays got the shorthanded goal and got you guys back into it?
Oh, it was great. Great to see that. Great pass by Kruger, too. It was just, I think it was the last time we scored in a PK was a long time ago. So it was a huge goal for us coming into the third there, too. I felt the group came together up here in the third intermission there. So it was a big part of this game.
I think Eric knows now more clearly, working with Jeremy as he did in Rockford last season before his promotion, when he's good and when he's not so good on the defensive end, because that's the main question. We know what this guy can do offensively. And what is encouraging, though, is that blue line starting to take shape, where with the way Connor Murphy and Carl Dahlstrom drawing the tough matchups and doing pretty well, I think, at it, despite what the Gaudreau line did for Calgary the other night, and despite what the Johansson line did here against Nashville. Between the pairing of Murphy and Dahlstrom, who have been solid, Gustafson seemed to have played a little bit better, paired with Duncan Keith. And then now that Henry Jokiharju is back from Worlds, granted Brent Seabrook was sick and missed the game on Wednesday night, but we're seeing the competition start to ramp up. Forsling, who's another one of these young defensemen, has been struggling a little bit lately before he was placed on injured reserve, dating back to an upper torso, I believe, injury from last weekend. His game has dipped a little more recently here. Brandon Davidson getting the opportunity, I thought, has been real solid. So we're starting to see some legitimate competition and minutes that you have to earn start to form here. And I think the higher the stakes are raised, Jeremy can just sit back and these guys are going to earn their time.
The healthy competition right now for the defense is great, and it's like you said, shaping up. And it's something you couldn't have pictured a couple months ago. It was just a problem. When Connor Murphy was hurt and you didn't know when he was coming back, and you know, no one expected him to have such a big positive impact when he did come back the way he has. It's, you know, you can argue a lot of games that he's their best defenseman out there.
Yeah.
Like you said, getting the top matchups. So, yeah, all this healthy competition is breeding some good play from the defense. We'll keep seeing how it shapes up. But I think Gustafson obviously still has a lot of potential. And I was probably writing, so I didn't get to see his minutes as the game progressed. I know he was doing well offensively again, but had a tough game. Did he lose some ice time? Because
no, he was still there, and then he was still there on the ice in overtime when the Blackhawks could not get the puck, and Nashville just kept it. But the 3-on-3 overtime is really a crapshoot, and you could tell Nashville was trying to play keep away, trying to force Taves and Kane to defend, and Gustafson to defend, and that ends up being the game winner there. We mentioned Jokke Haru returning after missing the previous 10 games when the Blackhawks assigned him to Team Finland for the World Junior Championships. It turned out exactly as management had hoped. Jokke Haru, a big piece, and he wore a letter for Team Finland in that run to the gold medal. And he was on the ice and got one of the helpers with a minute and a half left in that gold medal game against Team USA after the Americans had rallied from 2 down in the third period. Jokke Haru, with a minute and a half left, gets the secondary assist on what was the gold medal clinching goal for Finland. They were then able to hang on. And now that he was back before the game on Wednesday after morning skate, I caught up with the 19-year-old defenseman and asked him a couple questions, but we start with what it was like being the quote-unquote old guy, the veteran on Team Finland.
It was fun to be like that spot. Like, probably never have been that spot before. You know, always be the youngest guy on the team. So it was fun.
How did you take the news initially when you found out about it a few weeks ago?
Obviously it was like tough. You know, for like I have my family over here and live in Vancouver, Victoria. But like when I stepped on the plane, I was like getting more excited all the time and want to win the gold medal. And that was the goal. And happy that we won that.
Is that the most high-pressure hockey environment you've ever been in?
Honestly, maybe. I don't know. Probably. I don't feel the pressure too much, you know. And it's just about your head, you know. But it was probably top three over there. Yeah.
Take me to that moment when, you know, in the final minutes of the game when it's still kind of undecided. The Americans came back and tied. And what was that feeling like in terms of keeping your calmness and trying to play your game?
Yeah, I was trying to keep my head in the game in the last minute and have a good last shift and changing. There was 20 seconds left, and that was awesome.
And then when you helped score the winning goal, what was all that? Was that celebration like then, and then the celebration afterwards?
Celebration, I just try to keep my head still in the game, and I didn't celebrate too hard because I knew that my score still tied up. But it was big. It was big moment for our team and our nation too.
What have you heard about the response and the the reaction back home in Finland?
Yeah, it was big. It was big thing for Finland back home. You know, it's we're not too big country over there. So, but this country went pretty crazy after that, and now the players are back home over there, and they're still celebrating kind of there, and it's awesome to see the Finnish country having so much fun.
So how do you think this is going to help you overall in the big picture?
Big picture, it's have more time with the puck over there and just try to come with that kind of confidence back here. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you given anything back to the American players here or no?
No. Let's figure out there a couple cups, so no, maybe not.
First game back. Welcome back from juniors, kid. Here's the Nashville Predators. Go get them. But he played a real solid game, I thought. This time, I believe playing for the first time with Brandon Davidson, with Forsling out, with Seabrook out. And he was solid. He was just like he was before leaving, a cool, not very noticeable 19-year-old defenseman. And I thought, he just kind of picked up where he left off before traveling to Vancouver and Victoria, British Columbia.
Yeah, first where he was in the lineup was interesting, that Colleton kept Gustafson and Keith together. Mm-hmm. And it's either he has said before he really likes how they play together. But I think it's also maybe kind of easing Henry back into the way things are going here. So I thought that was interesting. And, you know, talking to him Wednesday morning before the game, he really did have a great experience, as you just heard, and it mattered a lot to him. And it's funny, I kind of asked him about, you know, we got wind of, maybe it was a story somebody put out, we got wind that it was maybe a little bittersweet for him to go, that he mm-hmm. that he didn't want to leave at first. And, you know, he goes, nah, that's all media talk. That's you guys. So yeah. It's pretty funny. Yeah, and then getting the goal and coming back, now you could say that, but he did great.
He's a cool, calm customer for a 19-year-old. I heard the interview, very reserved, although we hear from his teammates that that's not necessarily the case in the room or when he's on the ice. Apparently he's very vocal and screams a lot when he's on the ice, and I think he's going to be really a staple for on this blue line for years to come. And you were mentioning the existing defensemen, but it's going to be really exciting during training camp next year, because you're going to have Boquist out there, you're going to have Ian Mitchell out there, you're going to have Nicholas Beaudin out there, and they may be knocking on the door for the next training camp. Heck, Boquist was this past September vying for roster spots, and then the competition ramps up a little bit more for, you know, the veterans, the medium age guys, and the kids on the blue line. And the defense really has a bright future here in Chicago. Speaking of which, a former defenseman was hired last week, promoted last week to be elevated from Rockford. Sheldon Brookbank, who is on the two teams for the Blackhawks, the 2013 lockout shortened season in which he helped the team win a cup as a seventh defenseman, and then stuck around for the 13-14 season. Sheldon Brookbank began his coaching career last year under Jeremy Colleton in Rockford, and with the coaching staff still needing to be round out up here, Jeremy didn't want to leave the Ice Hogs coaching, you know, the bench baron down there by taking Sheldon right away. But he said this was all along part of the plan to eventually elevate him and be a part of his staff. It's a different voice. It's a different way of seeing things. Former veteran NHL defenseman.
And winger.
And winger.
For one game in the playoffs, right?
Yeah. And that one game when Duncan Keith got suspended in the 13 conference final. You know, there he was again. Contributing in the Western Conference Final. But in any event, we don't get a chance to talk to assistant coaches on the record at all, except for at the Blackhawks convention. They did make him available once he was promoted last week, and here you hear some of his thoughts on getting the promotion and being back here at the NHL level.
You know, I'm looking forward to it. There's a lot of guys I know on the roster and the guys I've worked with in Rockford, so I have that level of familiarity with them, so I think that'll help. And just, you know, taking it one day at a time and getting my feet wet and get things going here.
What's been the hardest transition for you to go from play to coaching?
Honestly, it's sometimes when guys are on the ice or acting up, you don't have a hand in it anymore. You know, you get a little fired up on the bench just watching guys, you know, maybe stick guys in your team and stuff, and, you know, it's out of your hands. And I know that's kind of a simple thing, but that's, you know, you just realize you're more of a coach now, and it's just you let the players do what they do, and you just got to just keep your cool back there.
Does it help that you have the relationships with these former players of yours, or is there a fine line between being a coach and obviously a former player, a former teammate?
Yeah, there's definitely a difference between being a coach and a teammate, but you know what? I think it helps that I have a relationship with those guys, just with the communication factor. And you know, I guess the job for assistant coach is always to be this sort of in between the coaching staff and the players. So I feel like I have a little bit of a leg up in that sense, that I know some of these guys already and I could talk to them, and I have a lot of respect for them. So, you know, I think it'll help just having that relationship already.
Who's been the biggest influence on you for your coaching style, or who's like a coach that you look up to?
Coach that I look up to? Jeepers. I don't know. I mean, it's just you take a lot from the coaches over the years of, you know, that you had in your career. And, you know, obviously Q was a great guy here. Took a lot from him. Randy Carlisle, he had his kind of old school way that I kind of enjoyed out there in Anaheim. And I had a couple of guys in the minors, Claude Noel, Bob Woods. I liked what they did too. So you just take bits and pieces, and, you know, then working with Jeremy, you learn a lot from him too. So you sort of take a little bit from everywhere you've been with all your experiences, and then you just kind of put it together in how you want to coach.
Did you always see this as your post-playing career path, or is it something that just developed recently?
Yeah, I mean, I thought about it, yeah. And you prepare for it a little bit. You don't want to be a player just totally preparing to be a coach, because you want to just focus on being a player. But Yeah, I definitely thought about it at times, and it was something I was comfortable with, you know, throughout my career, whether it's just organizing some skates in the summer and stuff like that, just getting a little taste of it. But you definitely think about it along the way.
Funniest part of that interview is when Birkbeck's talking about getting angry when other players or opponents are taking liberties with his player and wanting to jump over the boards. Hopefully we don't see that with Sheldon, but that'll be fun to watch.
He was that kind of player. He fought John Scott. Mm-hmm. I mean, remember that? You got to have a death wish to do that. He was a really tough guy.
Not afraid of anything. All right, so let's wrap this up with some, as we alluded to earlier, some mid-season picks on some awards at the end of the year, and who's going to be the final four in the Stanley Cup playoffs. This is we watch a real nail-biter wind down on Wednesday night between Ottawa and Anaheim, a battle of eight-game losing streaks, and it's tied at one in the final couple final minutes at the Duck Pond. Let's start out with some individual awards, maybe the four major ones, the Norris, the Adams, the Calder, and the Hart. Let's, and I never zeroed in on the Norris, but I think I'm going to have to go... We're kind of similar here from what I can understand. And obviously there's some candidates up and down. You can go with a Hedman in Tampa Bay who has won this thing, a couple of the other old standbys. Whether you want to go Erik Karlsson, who is on an incredible tear points-wise as we speak here for the San Jose Sharks. But one team that has really made a jump this year, and I think, you know, it's kind of reflected in our picks here for some of the individual honors, was the Calgary Flames. And Mark Giordano, who wears the C for Calgary, has really been impressive and part of really a deep defensive unit for the Flames. And if I had to make my choice right now, based on the improvement of that club, I might have to go with Giordano for winning the Norris Trophy.
I agree with you. That's who I had ahead of the games on Wednesday night. He had the fifth most points in the league with 40 and the best plus-minus with plus 30 ratings. So, yeah, I think he's just been solid all year, and I don't see that tapering off at all.
He's not a guy that lights it up on the score sheet or anything like that, but just solid, reliable. He's been that way and under the radar on these Calgary teams that have not been good enough over the last couple of years, but he's really taken the bull by the horns, taking nothing away from this Nashville defensive core. Four more assists on Wednesday night. That gives them 119 points on their blue line so far this season. So my initial gut, that's probably the one I spent the fewest amount of time really, really looking at. But Mark Giordano for both Scott and I for the Norris. And along those lines, the Adams Trophy for Coach of the Year. I'm looking at Calgary as well. Bill Peters was a coach of the Rockford IceHogs a few years back, then went and joined Detroit, had a tour of duty with Carolina, and with that new ownership taking over, Bill saw an opportunity to bail out of his contract. They let him go, and again, that Calgary team has been playing really well, and I think the Blackhawks are glad they're not seeing that team for the rest of the season.
I agree. Bill Peters, you know, they improved a lot in a lot of areas where they need to improve. He's been great with the younger players there. And I just remember when they were here on Monday, just listening to him in scrum and thinking what a good coach he is and what a great job he's doing. So I also got Bill Peters.
Yeah, I think you can make an argument for Phil Housley with what Buffalo has done so far this season. Montreal has made a jump with Claude Julien as well. And then there's Barry Trotz. Look what happened to the Islanders, and look where they are, even though they lose John Tavares. I think you can make those arguments as well, but front and center, I think, for both of us is Bill Peters. How about Rookie of the Year for the Calder? There's a lot of good young players. To me, there's one that's head and shoulders above the rest, Elias Pettersson, the 19-year-old, slight of frame, but man, he's got ridiculous moves, putting up points, leading all rookie scores right now as he battles through an injury. The Vancouver Canuck, to me, is the guy that is the clear Calder Trophy front runner.
I agree. Unless an injury keeps the rookie off the ice, it's usually the rookie that's leading in points, and I think he's leading by a lot, right?
Yes, by a wide margin. I have to go back and look at it, but yeah, a couple of remember what the Calder Trophy race was like last year with the Barzals and all, you know, DeBrincat gets what finished at seventh or eighth
in the goals his rookie year
in the Calder Trophy voting. But yeah, Elias Pettersson. Hopefully, he's not out for too much longer from that injury that he suffered. I am going through all the pages. Here's the rookie scoring leaders: 22 goals, 42 points. He leads Colin White of Ottawa by 17 points, and then comes the number one overall pick, Rasmus Dahlin of Buffalo, as 21. Guy I really like, Brady Tkachuk, but he has been off and on injured, playing for an Ottawa team that we're watching right now, really struggling. So Calder Trophy for me and you goes to Pettersson. Are we going to disagree on anything here as we go to the Hart Trophy?
I think we actually probably have the same heart. I think we were talking about
share a heart.
We share our hearts on this podcast.
Let's not go there. But Johnny Gaudreau, again, it's the old argument: who is the best player in hockey overall? I don't think there's any argument that Connor McDavid's the guy. But look where Edmonton is right now. Played really well for a while when Ken Hitchcock took over, but you know, he leads in everything. But for impact, we saw it with Taylor Hall last year with New Jersey. And granted, Gaudreau has a bunch of help on that top line with Elias Lindholm that came in here the other night, and I love Sean Monahan. Those guys have destroyed the Blackhawks in three meetings, and the reigning first star of the week comes in on Monday and shows exactly why with a couple of goals.
Yeah, he had a huge night.
The Hawks finding him.
It's finding him. He's just relentless right now. Everything's going his way because he's making it do that. He's a great playmaker. Like you said, playing on a great team that's only improved. A lot of good guys around him. So, you know, I don't see that. He's not leaning points right now. I think I want to say he's fifth maybe. But I think he's going to be pretty steady, and he's on quite a tear right now. And I think we're going to see a few more streaks like that before the year's over.
So we agree it's the year the Calgary Flames come Las Vegas in June. Boy, that was quite a debate we had. Boy, we really slugged it out, disagreeing.
Apologies are going to have to happen after this. Things were said.
And we will, of course, delete this podcast, especially have it gone come June when the awards are coming out, so no one will be able to track this down. All right, so we have a love for the Calgary Flames. Do either of us have them in the Final Four representing the Western Conference as a finalist? We want to take a look at our picks, who's going to be vying for berths in the Stanley Cup Final, who's going to be matching up, and then who's going to win it. For me, I have Vegas coming out of the Pacific. I have this Nashville team. Tough choice between Winnipeg and Nashville, but Connor Hellebuck isn't playing quite as well, I don't believe, as he did last year. Pekka Rinne's playing better. And a goalie can go cold at any time, and Rinne did not have a good playoff last year. But I have Vegas and Nashville returning to the Western Conference Final. I do have the Predators overcoming Vegas this time. I think they have a little salt in their wound from their second-round exit last year. And out east, man, I would love to pick, like, every team in the Atlantic, those first three teams between Toronto and Boston, who are on a collision course, to meet in the first round once again. But the way Tampa is playing, I see them not slowing down at all. And, boy, coming out of the Metro was a tough choice for me. I just don't think Washington is going to be able to come back this year. They'll be in the equation. And I wasn't crazy about what I saw the Pittsburgh Penguins on Sunday night when the Blackhawks beat them. However, I see Jimmy Rutherford making a deal for an impact defenseman down the stretch, and that might be enough to get them over the top. This team knows how to get through a playoff run. They lost to Washington last year in getting knocked out, and I see Sid and the guys going up against Tampa in the Eastern Conference Final. What about you?
Well, in the West, you know, I'd have to look and see how the pairing and the bracket and the playoff tree can unfold. But I think that for me, that the two best teams I've seen in the West thus far are Winnipeg and Nashville. So I think, you know, we talked about Hellebuck. He's a great goalie. I think that there's just a team that can take it to you, Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. I think they're fast. I think they score a lot. Predators, we saw them Wednesday night. I think everything you see in a championship caliber team mostly starts with their defense. Their defensive core is at times unbeatable. The Hawks played them well on Wednesday. They've gotten guys back. And you got that great defense, and you got Rene, who's been playing awesome. You got guys like Arvidsson and Forsberg who can score and get a lot of points. So I think the Preds are going to be your finalists in the West. I think they'll get to the Cup and the Cup final, that is. And I think in the East, I like I like Tampa. You know, it's funny. I'm not done.
It seemed like you were thinking about that as you were saying it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how to eloquently word this because everyone always picks Tampa. And as I make fun of everyone every year since 2015, everyone picks Tampa to win the whole thing. And I think I might have to do that this year. I've been holding back, and rightfully so. I think the other, maybe the second best team in the East is Boston. I think all year I've been impressed by them. Great young players. Rask can play pretty well in net. A lot of the veteran guys have not lost much. Bergeron is still, one of, if not the best two-way center in the game. So I think they got a lot of good veteran and young players in Boston.
Yeah, so obviously it's going to have to shake down in terms of seeding for those teams to match up against each other. And, boy, this has been really combative because I have Nashville and Tampa in the Stanley Cup final, and I have the Lightning winning it this time too. So that would be two Stanley Cup finals in a few years for Nashville. Coming up empty, but then they can raise another banner in Nashville and let everybody know that they were a Stanley Cup finalist. Sorry, Fred. Sorry about that.
They give the Blackhawks so much bad business. They deserve it.
And the nail biter in Anaheim was won by the Ottawa Senators, so the Ducks' losing streak goes to 9. The Senators snap theirs at 8. And let's keep in mind, though, the Senators do not have their first-round pick based on that trade. If they end up being one of those two worst teams, those one and two picks, they don't know either. Colorado owns Ottawa's first-round pick. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot there, Ottawa. Before we wrap up, you were a very busy man tonight because when I glanced over in the second intermission, I was expecting first time I looked for you to already have a nice pile of grub on your plate. I looked over and had to take a picture because you hadn't done that yet. The intermission was well underway. You're working hard. I think you were going back, if I see correctly, you were breaking down some of the goals in this one to write for your final story.
You didn't have to take a picture. Let's just imagine you just open your phone and maybe check some see if there's any updates. You see a picture of yourself right where you're sitting. I don't know, Chris, where's this going to stop? I'm going to be sitting at home on my couch just looking at my iPad, and I'm going to see a picture of myself looking at my iPad from my home. I was making sure to watch video that I got a couple goal descriptions correct, and then I was going to go get some food, which is great, beef and nachos.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't have any of the green beans?
No, I didn't. I didn't mess with that tonight. I didn't have a lot of time to eat after that.
Well, one thing they did have up there that they also had at the media meal downstairs prior to the game, did you have that pretzel-covered caramel chocolate brownie, warmed chocolate brownie? It was to die for. I had a little bit here at pregame. I saw it sitting out there again during the second intermission. The willpower did come through, though.
Not only did I not have it at the press box dinner, I did not have the before dinner because I had such a big lunch by myself.
Oh, that's why.
I talked to Ryan Hartman Wednesday after Predators morning skate, and he's talking about how he went to Al Cheval on Randolph, his burger place. And I heard, I think I might have heard Tracy Myers recommend it to one of the Predators writers too. I'm not sure. They're talking about burgers, but I'm like, I want a burger, and I'm gonna go. I kind of got to go over near there for some errands. I'm gonna go in. So I ordered the double cheeseburger, and I believe they gave me a triple by accident.
Wow.
There's three patties that I ate.
Scott's going back. As we continue searching for title sponsors of the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast, you're not over your cold yet. You're still hacking here.
I'm on antibiotics, though. I'm not contagious.
It was yummy. All of it was. So, yes, again, stick tap to the United Center cooking, baking staff here. They always take care of us well. All right, done with food talk here. We'll come back at you at some point. It's going to be a weird schedule next week. I'm not sure if the Blackhawks are coming back home between a Monday in New Jersey and a Thursday in New York, or it's vice versa. So we'll figure something out for next week. But for the here and now, we want to thank you for joining us. Yeah, it's a quarter to 12. I don't know what time they close the parking lots. Our cars might be trapped in the United Center parking lots, but we got to get out of here. Thanks for joining us. Hope you enjoyed it. We also want to thank Joe Romano for piecing this all together. And again, we invite you to follow us on the Blackhawks Crazy Facebook page at facebook.com/Blackhawks Crazy. You can follow me and Scott on Twitter. I'm at Bowden Tweets. Scott is at Scott King Media. And be sure to subscribe on iTunes. Leave a review. You do that, you'll have the podcast ready for you and waiting for you as soon as Joe's done working his magic. So for Scott King, I'm Chris Bowden. Thanks again for joining us. We'll talk to you next weekish. Bye-bye.